The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
You know, this is pretty much a year, you would think, where everybody's kind of, I don't want to say on notice because that sounds menacing, but like,
no, it's a 12-month job interview. Here we go.
Because right, you got a new guy taking over next year, and new guy, yep. You know, somebody that's coming in is going to want people that they think fit what they do. So whether it's the manager or the coaching staff or whatever, I mean, this year is going to be about performance. It's not going to necessarily be about winning the World Series.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. And so anything been going on here in the offseason? We have a lot to catch up on with the Cardinals since their final game there in San Francisco. And who better to do it with than, of course, my friend and the great Kevin Wheeler of Camo X 1120 AM, co-host of the DGS. I didn't say show twice, Kevin. Aren't you proud?
The DGS show. The Dave Glover Show.
Right. See, I nailed it.
You did. Well done, sir. How are you?
I'm good. So we're recording this here on the eve of the World Series, and we are doing so using a platform that has my video up, but you don't have video.
Nope.
Which sets it up perfectly because you can totally see when I roll my eyes with something you said, but I can't see it the many times you're going to do the same, like right now. Like, I'm totally missing your expression right now.
And to be fair, it's not the website. It's not the service. It's the computer that I'm on.
Correct.
Does not have a camera because I'm using the computer at KMOX and it's pretty old, so it doesn't have a camera on it.
Correct. I you can see that I'm here wearing my superhero training shirt.
Nice.
You are probably wearing, I don't know, Miami gear.
I'm wearing a army green t-shirt.
Oh, okay. Very good. All right. Well, that paints a picture for the listeners. Where should we start? Cardinals finished the season with a winning record. Okay. Does that matter? Cardinals then quickly hold a press conference before the postseason starts with everybody because they recognize that they need to get their messaging out and they need to start making changes just to respond to the previous 2 years. This is something that they telegraphed. I spoke to John Mozeliak, probably as many listeners know, there just before the season ended. He and I had a long phone conversation about some of the things that we were afoot, not all of them, but his return, what role that would be, some of the looks of the staff, some of the changes, and of course, then of the growing voice of Chaim Bloom, which we then found out meant that he would take over as president of baseball operations for the 2026 season. He has a lot on his plate for the next year, and in the past week, he's been joined by the first of his hires, Cardinals hires, but this is the Chaim team, if you will. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Cardinals have some changes to their coaching staff. Where would you like to begin? Can we begin with what you think of the past 4 weeks is the most impactful change? Because change keeps coming up. So let's talk about change.
Well, I think the most impactful part of it, Derek, is the fact that there's going to be a new person in charge. Right. I mean, it's hard for people that have been in a position for a long time to make dramatic changes to how they see and do things. Right. I mean, you know, so people always, you know, and you get the exchanges on the chats at STLtoday.com. We all see it on Twitter. It's not always aggressive. Sometimes it is, but it's always something about how did they let this get this way? Well, I think the how is pretty easy. They had success doing it a certain way for a long time. And when you're having success, that doesn't really lend itself to wanting to seek out ways to do things differently. And then the baseball world zoomed past you and you were like, oh no.
Gosh, you know what though, man? It always should. Like,
yeah, no, I agree.
You know, I had a long talk with someone who the other day. And, you know, one of the things that I thought is that, like, the Cardinals just, They had success. They overcame some of their mistakes. You know, they knew them, but they pivoted, still contended. They, you know, had the dramatic firing of Mike Schilt and still then won the next year. You know, they had this thing where it's like, oh, well, we got momentum.
Right.
But what they were missing was that it was downhill.
Right.
Right. Like, They were no longer.
It's easy to miss something when you're going well or you're having success or when you've had success with something in the past, right? Look at a player. How hard is it for them to change identities? How hard is it for a player to realize, wow, what I've done my whole life doesn't work anymore and I need to change it?
Yeah, I mean, we see it a lot, but you're right.
A lot of guys have a hard time with
it. Yeah.
Right. And it sometimes comes too late or comes later on. And, you know, you'll see it's a very loose example. It's not really perfect, but use JD Martinez as an example. He hit a certain way for his whole life and he got to AAA and he realized I can't hit in the major leagues doing it this way. So he went and redid everything. And then we see what's followed that.
Justin Turner had
that realization earlier because he wasn't getting the opportunity. But let's say he was in the major leagues and getting by, and he was pretty good, but not what he ended up becoming. Would he have had the same incentive to say, I'm going to start all over and redo it?
So what I'm hearing you say is that the Cardinals didn't pull off an Andre Pallante. They were like, well, you know, we're doing things well in this role. We're getting lefties out. We're kind of, you know, counterintuitive as a reliever.
I pulled a Miles Michaelis, Derek.
Okay. But they, have not gone to Japan for...
I'm talking about the guy from the last 2 years who keeps doing things the same way and getting bad results.
No, I'm saying they didn't do an Andre Pallante. He wasn't comfortable in the role he had, even though he was doing it well. And he was like, I can do something more. Oh, I got to radically change stuff. And I need a platform to do it. And I mean this quite literally. Like, the Cardinals are trying to pull an Andre Pallante right now.
Sure.
And that includes going back to the minors to refit everything and redo stuff. So, the Cardinals are following the Pallante plan.
Yeah, I think that may, and, you know, how many, I mean, just look around, how many leadership groups in baseball stay the same for 20 years?
Oh, it's the Yankees.
It's super rare. Right, you're right. It's Brian Cashman, basically, at this point. And part of that is simply
otherwise, there's like a traveling group, right? Like,
yeah. There's a Dombrowski who's always there, but he's in a different spot every 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, and
because
some people
his way works
him.
A certain way, right? Dave Dombrowski he's the guy you want when you're all in, right? Because he's going to trade prospects for proven players. He's going to spend your money, and he's going to put you in the postseason. He's going to put you in the World Series and probably win your World Series, but then shortly after that, you realize, oh, man, our farm system's decimated. Our guys have gotten old, and we're not good anymore. And that happened in Boston. That happened in Detroit. I'm sure it's going to happen in Philly. But it's worth it because you're winning World Series when you do that.
And Miami.
Yeah, it was a little different there. Like, he built that, right?
Yeah,
he
outfitted it with money, and then they had to flush
it. Yeah, and then Wayne Huizenga's like, yes, guess what, guys? We have to sell everybody.
Well, you know, to his credit, I mean, he might have seen that Blockbuster was only going to exist in one state 20 years later.
He had that kind of foresight. Huh?
So,
no,
might have seen the streaming coming.
So I guess the biggest sign that of change that we can all buy into, that, you know, people covering the team, the people that are rooting for the team, the fans can buy into, is there is a new voice. He's not the primary voice now, but he's going to be the primary voice next year. But he has maybe the more important job now, which is doing what we're talking about, which is starting off the remodeling of the house.
Yeah,
right. Well, on the ground floor, and he's going to work his way up. But and I know that you've probably I know you've gotten these questions in the chat. I get it all the time on Twitter and even in person. People will be, why would they do this? Why don't they just have Bloom take over now and fire Mo?
Okay, like, answer that.
Yeah.
What is your view of that?
Well, there's two reasons. I mean, one, we know that Bill DeWitt Jr. likes and respects John Mozeliak, so he doesn't want to do that. But I think that's secondary. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is asking Chaim Bloom to do what you're asking him to do and run the major league franchise is too much. If you need to rebuild the house and you need somebody that's going to relay the foundation, you need somebody who does foundations and is only doing that for now. You don't need the roofer. You know, I mean, like, you need to get Chaim Bloom needs the time to do this part first rather than asking him to do two things at once, because those are two major projects at once.
Yeah.
Running the major league roster is a major project. It's a big deal. It takes a lot of time. And so does completely revamping a player development system and all that goes into that.
you've kind of really hit on it there. And the other side part of that is something that DeWitt has valued consistently, and that is continuity. And, you know, by not making a complete, you know, ejector seat of the front office and bring in Himes Group, he allows for kind of a transition of power,
right,
as opposed to a change in power, you know, or sure, an abrupt change in power. So you're right. I mean, and it does give them structure. Now we can discuss whether or not it's going to be a beneficial structure,
right,
but it
right,
does give them structure going into this year and off season. So that you're right. He's not just, and we see it, you can even see it in this past week, right?
Yep.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yep.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger. Because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So, you know, Heim Bloom hired Rob Serfolio out of Cleveland, guy who has a really good reputation, 32 years old, was on the Yale baseball team, then was an intern with Cleveland and has worked his way up over the past decade with them, came up in conversations as who's a manager candidate for the Guardians when they were looking for, you know, Terry Francona's replacement, and they were thinking about like who internally could be a candidate. He came up, Rob came up as a guy who has the right kind of blend of the modern manager and the ability to connect, which is also something that Mozeliak brought up, is this notion that he is a good coalition builder and leader, relatable and all that stuff, which is going to be good because one of his first tasks is right downstream from Himes' first task, which is to then unify some silos that have existed within the Cardinals organization. Yeah. It's time as a flat circle, and we're going through some of these same things again. But you know, the reasons are different, right? Yep. You know, some of this sounds pretty familiar for longtime fans who have followed the Cardinals before podcasts and social media were a thing and know about the fissures and ruptures and breaks in the team in 2007 that led to Mozeliak's promotion to general manager and mm-hmm. the departure of Walt Jocketty. Okay, so, but that was a communication thing. Like, the minor league system and the analytics were doing things, and the major league team was somewhat resistant to it, right? And
right.
there was friction and personality conflicts and power, you know, shifts.
And nicknames for certain people.
Yeah. I mean, Harry Potter, of course, is
yeah,
what you're talking
that's
about.
That's Jeff
there.
Luno's nickname, yeah.
Yeah.
From the baseball, you know, guys, not from us.
Yeah, I mean, and there was a lot of it, and, you know, closing off of guys from meetings that they should have been involved in for, you know, to help input, you know, to the detriment of the team. And DeWitt saw that and then wanted to get a unifier in chief, right? And mm-hmm. Mozeliak, to kind of get the history, he had a month as interim and then was promoted.
Yep.
He had a tailwind of already being that liaison, already being that person.
right,
who was working on both sides, so, and had both an analytics and a business interest to go with a scouting background. So that blend was there. This is a different situation, even though it has, you know, the penumbra of the same, right? Like there's elements where you can see like, oh, Man in the Shadow, this sure looks the same. What's happened here is an erosion of staff,
yeah,
an erosion of investment, an erosion of basically infrastructure, but how it was also being utilized. And, you know, the Cardinals had a downsizing of the staff, which we've all talked about coming out of the pandemic. Some of those spots were not filled. The Cardinals had promotions in places where they didn't backfill. And so those responsibilities either shifted or were misplaced. There's no other way to put it, right?
Right.
New voices gained great prominence. You know, some of the roles that would have helped facilitate communications between departments or between levels were not present. Some of the usual jobs tasked with that were not there. They didn't have, for whatever reason, they didn't hire those folks when people left. You know, this all has been going on for multiple years, and, you know, then the tech hasn't come along, the project, everything, all the litany of things that we all know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then also just two examples in the past 12 months that, or more than 12 months, but say the past year and a half that hit on this is, you know, their director of performance left, the guy who helped found that group, helped work in it, helped gave it direction under Moe's heading, you know, and charge. He left. And instead of hiring for that position, they kind of fractured out the elements of it to different disciplines, right? So if there's a nutrition element, it went to, you know, training, right? If there was a strength and conditioning and workout element, that went to the strength and conditioning coordinator. So that added to the responsibility of others as opposed to filling that gap. And then the same thing happened this past year. They had the director of international scouting leave. And so there was more on assistant general manager Moises Rodriguez to go back to a role he had and really focus on that. So less of time he could spend doing, you know, the AGM stuff, right?
Yeah.
So this has been part of what's happened. So it's not the fractures and fissures and conflicts and clashes of 2007, even though the remedy sounds the same. What it is cohesion and cooperation that needs to be recreated.
Yeah. And the part, so I can understand why there've been the delays down in Jupiter, right? I mean, that's not entirely on the Cardinals. Some of that's shared by the Marlins. And there's been holdups there that, you know, that.
Well, they had a third party not get the permits, dude.
Right. And that's also like, if you're talking about capital expenditure, that's not going to be cheap. That's going to be a lot of money. What I cannot
put a figure on it. All right, here you go. You ready?
I don't know.
Put a dollar figure on it.
Yeah. For the facility changes?
Yeah.
I mean, I have no specific idea, but I'm going to get, it's got to be in the tens of millions.
It's a $108 million project.
There you go.
It is split between multiple teams or bodies, right? Okay, but
50,
real 60 quick.
Each, right?
No, because it's three. So
that's right. It's the city too.
County. County. So you have three bodies. However, two of them are on the hook for the overages. And you know what they're going to be?
Yeah.
You know what they're going to be because of inflation and because of this delay and all that stuff?
I mean, probably 50%.
Yeah. And you know who's going to be? Two teams are on the hook for them, but you know who's probably going to pay them?
The Cardinals, because the Marlins are cheap and they say they don't have any money.
So this is part of it. And I'm not trying to, I'm explaining, I'm not advocating again. That's a bind that they've got themselves into.
Yeah.
And they are essentially in a spot where the Cardinals want to pay their way out of this,
mm-hmm.
but they are going to have to pay. It's not a small investment.
No. And I can understand that happening, right? Because you have a partner, you've got a county involved, you've got a lot of things going on. I can understand how that happened. Mm-hmm. I cannot understand how you don't have a catching instructor. I cannot understand how you don't have more roving instructors, more people working around the minor leagues to find people like Victor Scott. There's no reason why a guy like Victor Scott is not a great outfielder. There's no reason why his jumps and angles aren't good right now. There's no reason for that. That should have been, with his speed and his ability, he should have been taught that a long time ago. There's no reason why Ivan Herrera should be as bad as he is at throwing runners out.
Yeah, that one's confusing.
Because he has the physical ability. His arm strength's not great, but it's good enough. It's good enough for him to be an average thrower.
I mean, there's some retrofitting going on there. You would know this better than I, but I remember when he was a rising prospect. I don't remember him getting dinged for his arm strength.
No, but if you look at the measurements, it's not great.
But his mechanics were off.
Well, no, like, that was the discussion. My point is that everything that I see with him is fixable to a level, right? We can't fix him so that he throws like JT Realmuto. But we can fix him so that he throws like a major league average catcher, which is all you need when a guy has a bat.
Right.
And by the way, he's also done some other things. His blocking numbers that were pretty good this year on StatCast. Again, yeah. take that for what it is. He probably doesn't have the feel for the game that Pajes does, which is why the Cardinals like Pajes, because he does a lot of those little things, you know, running a pitcher, running a game, that kind of thing. But that doesn't mean that can't be learned, and it doesn't mean you still can't play the position. But if you put yourself in a spot where that guy can't throw anybody out, that gets to a point where you don't want to put him out there, because that taxes your pitchers even more. Every right. base runner is a potential extra base, and that changes your pacing. It changes your pitch selection. It changes your confidence levels, and you don't want that. And it's just an example, right? I mean, like, Ivan Herrera is likely not the most important player in the organization. You know, guys like Gorman and Walker are much more important with what they can bring offensively. And this is, again, kind of the point. I don't understand not having bodies. That doesn't make sense because they're not that expensive. Roving instructors are not millions of dollars. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, that's the part that, like, I completely understand the challenge of building a big facility. But it doesn't mean you can't embrace those other ideas. You don't need $100 million facility to build a pitching lab where you can do more with your young players to tailor pitches to work together. Can do what you're seeing with Cleveland, can do what you're seeing with Tampa and Detroit, to do with Jack Flaherty what Detroit did with Jack Flaherty. That doesn't take hundreds of millions of dollars. It's partly that. They also changed how he moved. You know, their assistant pitching coach there is a guy named Robin Lund. His expertise is biomechanics. He's not a pure pitching guy. He's a science guy. And they got him moving his body in a different way. And yeah, he got healthy, but moving your body the right way can help keep you healthy as opposed to putting stress on the arm. And again, that's the kind of stuff that does not cost tens of millions of dollars. It does not do that. That's just a matter of committing to someone who has the mind for it and having you have to have tech, but it's not like, we're not talking about, again, that really expensive building. We're talking about stuff that's thousands of dollars, stuff that you can find on college campuses all over the country.
Yeah, Wake Forest is doing it pretty famously.
Vanderbilt is doing it. Tennessee's doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the conversations through the years, one of the things that I asked about, you know, is they have had different like evolutions of this. Clearly, you know, back in 2017, this is 7 years ago, the pitching lab was on their mind. And they recognized that that's what was where other folks were going. You know, in the years that followed, the Cubs made one. The Brewers have one of the most robust kind of pitching programs going. And you know, their lab is part of that. And you know, the Cardinals just didn't quite. I mean, they never did. They never got the Imagine thing off the ground. They had other projects that they were working on at the same time. One of which they did do, which was buy Memphis and then flip it. To the pitching lab specifically, you know, they were like, all right, well, outfit things with tech. And then they, you know, some of that tech wasn't used. So why have that tech? And then they had a mobile.
Why wasn't it used?
I mean, it just wasn't used in the minor.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like that.
That should have changed, right? Like that.
Those are the questions I don't understand.
That's right. You should have had a coordinator or a coach.
It should have been a priority. Said,
hey, here we go. Use this.
Yeah.
And then they had a mobile pitching lab, which we've seen in spring training. I don't know. Have you had a chance to see it? Did you see
it? No, I haven't seen it. But again,
they're in pictures.
They're not complicated things. I mean, you know, you need a computer. You need some high speed cameras.
Yeah.
You
which know, they had Edgetronics and whatever followed.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, again, I coach at a facility here in St. Louis that has a lot of those things.
That was the question that I kind of asked about is why didn't they farm this out? If they Well,
that's a great question too, right?
If they didn't, no pun intended with the farming out, but if they if they knew what they wanted and they have, you know, private facilities. Rapsodo is here in St. Louis, by the way.
It is, yeah. We have that at our building.
And then they also had places in Jupiter that were mm-hmm. running, or Palm Beach area, I guess I should say. Not all in Jupiter, but in that Palm Beach County area, you know, that were doing these things. Why not? Why did it have to be under the house? Why did it have to be under the roof
when right.
that was having such a problem? You know,
yeah, that's great, great way to put it.
And one of the answers I got was they wanted to be in control of it, right? Like the moment you franchise out that, right, then you are hiring others and buying into theirs. And they wanted it under their house so they had more control
over it. Well, and so then you wait to get it done.
Yeah, but so then that proved costly. And so, you know, along the like kind of two tracks of these changes that are happening is Cerfolio as assistant general manager in charge of player development and performance is going to oversee the two departments that we're talking about here.
Because
player development is the farm system. So, and then performance is this department of performance, which is somewhat inspired by like soccer teams have performance department. A lot of teams have this now. Yeah. But this is, you know, New Zealand's what rugby team had a very famous performance department. And, you know, this idea of like actually, you know what? A great example is the one you gave of Flaherty. That kind of stuff would come from a performance department. The biomechanics, the adjustment, the how to prepare to be better ready to perform. And then there's a player development aspect, which is fundamental skill sets and how do you perform.
Right.
Okay. So those are the two tracks. Cerfolio is going to oversee the hiring of a farm director and a director of performance, and they will both report to him. And then he reports to Haim and so on. And then we now have a tree being formed that is more familiar and more of what they used to have, which then the branches off of the new farm director would be these coordinators. And off of the coordinators then would be staff, which is something that the Cardinals have lacked. You know, like, you know, they, you know, like the Dodgers have at least one person at every level doing some of these pitching things. The Cardinals had one for an entire system, right?
Right.
You know, it's the kind of expansion of that. So you have that track. And then you have the major league track, Kevin, where, you know, there was hiring the return of John Jay, the reassignment of roles or change of roles for Willie McGee, which will allow him to kind of straddle both of these areas, which I think is interesting. And also is really familiar because remember Chris Carpenter was doing the same thing for pitchers and then walked out the door and went to the Angels. So there is like a familiarity aspect. This kind of like this reset sure seems like it's like going back to some things that worked pretty well for them.
Right.
And then the hiring of Brant Brown as hitting coach, you know, and then the whole staff otherwise returning. What do you make of these parallel tracks then? I mean, this speaks to what you were describing with Haim being able to focus on one side of the street while there is still high speed moves on the other side that Mozeliak is overseeing.
Right. And look, wouldn't you have to say that it's just from a point of logic, not through reporting, not through hearing anything through the grapevine. But, you know, this is pretty much a year, you would think, where everybody's kind of, I don't want to say on notice because that sounds menacing, but like.
No, it's a 12-month job interview. Here we go.
Right, because you got a new guy taking over next year. And the new guy, you know, somebody that's coming in is going to want people that they think fit what they do. So whether it's the manager or the coaching staff or whatever, I mean, this year is going to be about performance. It's not going to necessarily be about winning the World Series. Although, you know, once we sort out what they're actually going to do with the roster, we can talk about reasonable expectations. But yeah, this would seem to be a very simple process. And this also gives, you know, this is kind of tying into what we're talking about before, why you keep Mo and why you allow Haim to work on that separate track for now. It also gives him time to be just evaluating everyone, you know, the manager, the coaches, the minor league instructors, you know, scouting staff, analytics department, rebuild that minor, you know, the things that he wants to rebuild in player development and scouting and all of that. So it gives him the chance to identify all of those things and learn another. Yeah, I mean, I know he did that last year, but, you know, now that it's official that he's going to be the guy, you got 1 year, you got another year, I should say, to make sure that he knows exactly what he thinks he needs going into 2026 and beyond.
Just as just having talked to a lot of folks either during the season or after it, you know, it does seem that there is a palpable difference between the approach he took, you know, over the past year as an observer, not always a participant,
like, right,
you know, in the room and listening and hearing and then going out and listening and listening and listening. You know, one of the things that has come up several times is just they want to, they wanted to increase, I think they use the phrase increase the volume of his input,
right?
That's how it's been put, right? Well, now he's making decisions,
right?
So he's quite literally, you know, Han Bloom is quite literally going from being, you know, from the observer, he went from surveying the class to now being an active participant in the syllabus. Like, that's what's happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's interesting. I want to get your thoughts on this bit of a riddle, right? Mozeliak's made it very clear. He brought it up this week unprompted. I think he's going to bring it up other times too, just to remind folks that he's stepping aside at the end of this contract.
Right.
You know, that every day that passes now is one day less with him in that role. You know, and I wonder how you view that with this sense that his 12 months are likely going to be spent focusing on building the team for what comes next.
Right.
And not the farewell last run at the trophy before he departs.
Right.
And how do you think that might play out? And you've talked to him. How do you think that sits with him?
I mean, I mean,
instead of burnishing his legacy, he's building for the next one.
Right. I think you're around him more than I am, but obviously I've been around him and talked to him many times for the last 18 years. But I feel like the legacy is not just about what is going to happen from the time that he takes over, you know, going back to 07, 08 to now. I think he also views his legacy as what happens after he's gone too. The continuation of that and setting that up would certainly be a part of how he's seen. Probably not by, you know, Joe fan on the street, because that's nobody, you know, if I'm a fan, I don't really care about that kind of stuff, right? I'm not worried about a front office legacy. I want to be entertained. I want to see good baseball, whatever. But by his peers and by the DeWitts, who he clearly is very close with, that would mean a lot, I think, to get things back on track and set up so that when he does depart, that he's not leaving a hole in the ground. He's leaving a structure in place that can go back and continue to, or can kind of pick up where they left off 5 years ago with being a regular division winner, a regular team that advances deep into the playoffs, even if they don't win the World Series, as opposed to the one we've seen the last 5 years where you're constantly chasing the first round exit, basically.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's the steward notion.
Yeah.
You know, leave a place better than when you got it, right?
Yeah, and again, that may be personal for him. It may be in part what he feels is a duty to Bill DeWitt Jr. and what Bill DeWitt Jr. has done for him over this time, right? I mean, we know they're close. We know that they make decisions not on a day-to-day, you know, simple basis, but on all the big ones and all on setting the course, setting the vision, all that. We know that they've been tight for a long time. And I'm guessing trying to put myself in that seat, I feel like I would have that sense of maybe it's loyalty. Maybe it's, you know, paying back good deeds over the course of time. And I'd want to do that for someone I thought was important to me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm reading a little into that, it makes sense to me. Like that's a sensible thing. I can see that wanting to make sure that someone you respect a lot that you've worked for forever and have become friends with.
But you want to win?
Yeah, I absolutely. But I think, you know.
I mean, do you want to go out with like, oh, man, we got a top five farm system? Or yeah, do you want to go out with like, man, we took it to the NLCS? Or we got
a great question, but pragmatically, you might just look at it and say, we can't do that. And it could be as simple as ownership saying we can't do both. Mm. And that seems to have been the way it's framed, right?
I mean, look, they have.
I'm not saying I agree with it, but that's certainly how it's been framed. That we haven't been able to do all this and spend all this on player development and changes because we're spending it on the big league roster. I mean, that's exactly how it's been framed.
It is how it's been framed.
I don't agree with it, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, if that's the structure that you're given.
Let's real quick. It's been framed that way in hindsight. When questions about that were asked along the way, not so much, right? Like, it wasn't a direct, you know, you couldn't. The questions were asked year after year after year about payroll, right?
Yeah.
And about spending, but also about like, okay, and they were framed in such a way like, all right, you add Nolan Arenado, that's a sizable chunk. What limits does that impose elsewhere, right? Okay, or questions such as, okay, well, you add him. Now, what about the next step, right?
Yeah.
Like, what's that next step? And there's definitely like some, you know. The answers at the time did not go, well, you know, we've added these salaries and we've added these things.
Right.
And at the cost of not outfitting the system.
Right. Not hiring enough people.
Not hiring and everything like that. And the questions about like the downsizing of staff were related to the pandemic and just overall limits of spending, which also the major league roster had too. Remember, it had a shrink. And they did some of these contracts like Wilson Contreras, like Sonny Gray, where it was lower in the first year and back ended. Right. And so, you know, that was clearly a reflection of what I'm getting to, the growth in the rights fee for broadcast.
Right.
Which was going to upscale every year.
That's
and they
right.
had not yet gotten to even the richest portions of it yet.
No, that was the last, 5 to 8 years?
Right. Yeah. And they aren't even halfway through it when you measure it by how much Diamond Sports / Bally / FanDuel has paid. And so I think, you know, I'm like, all right, well, there's an element of retrofitting convenience here. Like, well, we put a lot into the major league staff and we had to cut corners here. Okay. Well, at the time you were saying that you weren't going to fill some of these staffs because of coming out of the pandemic. Or then you wanted some, you know, new leadership, or you were doing the facility, all this stuff, but it wasn't tied to the major league spending.
Right.
The major league spending and its growth and the likelihood of, you know, being $200 million for the first time was directly connected to over and over and over again the growth of the rights fee and the riches on the horizon, which we
are
get
now,
now the crux of it.
Yeah.
Is now a question.
Yep.
And they were paid. In the entirety this past year, they knew that. They knew that going in. They knew that when they were going off to sign the sign the pitchers and all that stuff. They do not know that now.
No.
That is a change.
At this moment, they may not have that at all. It might be a totally – I don't know how far along they are in exploring things, but obviously – they can renegotiate because that's essentially what Diamond Sports is telling teams that they might keep, right? Like, yeah, we might be able to keep
not
you.
Telling, no, not telling. They're trying to leverage that. That's what they
right,
want.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, I mean,
they're just indirectly saying that through what they're claiming in bankruptcy.
No, you know they're saying? Directly saying. I'm trying to tear down the euphemisms.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Good
they
point.
Are directly saying that.
Yeah.
Diamond
we'll
Sports.
Keep you if you'll take less money.
Right, yeah. Diamond right. Sports is trying to leverage. And the Cardinals are not in the bankruptcy hearing. Diamond has approached them about renegotiating. And you know what? They're not renegotiating up.
Right. No, that's exactly right.
That's
so do you take the guaranteed decrease or do you go the route that some of the other franchises have and you go to the way that Major League Baseball is taking in-house and instead of signing on to definitely take less, you might make less. But the point is you can also see upside there. You can also see more team control, more league control. The options are going to be interesting in the coming years, but they don't change. The coming years don't change where you currently sit.
Right. I'm going to have a podcast here where we dive in deeply on this topic. And I got a guest all lined up. For
great.
That,
That's going
to
be awesome.
To it. But I want to stress here. And then, you know, it's a real drop in revenue because any scenario that you just described is fraught with issues such as existing contracts, streaming, and there's no way to wrap your mind around the math of recreating what they're owed next year.
Right.
Like you just, you know, they are owed around $78 million, 75 to $78 million, and it's set to rise to 80, 85, 88, and so on. Okay. So just if you are counting on a $78 million payday next year, and you can relate to this, Kevin, and someone says, yeah, you know what? I got funds for 25, but hey, man, you can try to make up the rest somewhere else. Where else? What are you talking? How much are subscriptions going to be for the fans to make up that other? And I'm not saying that those are the numbers. That's a far steep decline. But say they cut 20% off.
Right.
Say Bally says we can only do 80% of what we owe you, 75% of what we owe you. Start doing the math on the leftover, and it's significant.
Yeah.
And if you do it in your terms as a single fan who wants to stream and how much that would charge just to close the gap, no chance. No chance would you spend your entertainment dollar that way.
No.
So the team has to go, well, we're going to get less.
Yeah. And that's the question,
how much?
For the time, right. And because I think 5 to 8 years down the road, all of this is actually going to be better than it has been.
It will be better for fans. But
I think it's going to be better for teams, too. I mean, like, think about it. There's a reason why all of these TV networks and why, you know, Diamond Sports, there's a reason why they were willing to give you guaranteed money. And it's because they were making more than that. Now, you're going to have to do it a different way, but they're making more than that through subscription fees, through advertising, through things like that. You can do that yourself. And not have to sacrifice the top end.
There is a major difference, though, in the future model than there is in the past model. In the past model, if you had 100 cable subscribers and 20% of them wanted pro sports,
right?
All 20% of it wanted news, and the other 60% were just interested in movies and reality TV shows. They all paid 100% of the freight for the other ones.
Right.
And the highest dollar cost was sports because it was DVR proof. Right.
It was live
television, live advertising, super money involved because people tuned in to watch it. They didn't, record it, pause it, do it on their own turn, fast forward through commercials, all this stuff. It was DVR proof. What's changed now is the a la carte notion, where if you have 100 cable subscribers and 20 of them are interested in sports and 80 of them aren't, the 80 no longer want to pay that.
Right. They're
unplugging.
Yep.
And so now you are, as a distributor and a cable network, you're dealing with 80 cents less on the dollar than you were counting on. And that is not an exaggeration. That is not an exaggeration.
No,
that is a bad business model. But that's not an exaggeration. And so the future that you're describing is going to be better for fans and consumers. It's going to cost more, but it's going to ultimately be better for the.
But you're going to have a better product.
And more people are going to have access to it. More fans of baseball will have access to baseball on demand with one button of the team they love, wherever they are in the world, no blackouts, nothing. You're going to have that.
Right.
It's going to cost you something.
Yep.
But you're going to have that. What the teams aren't going to have is the people who wanted the CNN and the news networks or TNT or movie networks. They're not going to get a dime from those folks.
No.
And they used to. And so I don't know how it's going to be financially better for teams. It could be. They're going to have to get creative to do it. And that's their job. They should do that to increase the revenue. But it's going to be better for fans, and it may ultimately be better for teams as far as reaching fans, which is just as important as revenue.
And growing the future, right.
Right. But
because when you think about reaching young fans, you're not reaching them on old school cable.
Right. Right. Yep.
You're reaching them with streaming and, doing creative things like that. Yeah. It's going to be fascinating, but again, no matter what, the short term for a lot of these teams, unless you're one of the teams that owns your own network, right? Unless you have the YES Network or NESN or whatever, you're going to have a short term shortfall at the very least.
I mean, look no further than the Texas Rangers, who win the World Series one year and are trying to and can't, you know, and then just bow out of free agency the next.
Yeah. Minnesota had a similar offseason, didn't spend much money.
Yeah. And this brings us back to like the conversation of like, you know, there's some kind of retrofitting here of like, well, you know, we shifted spending here, shifted spending there, when reality just, you know, point out that this is where it is. I mean, this is the bulk of it. There is no spending on the minor league system and minor league coaches that is as significant of a cost as what they're going to lose from the rights fee. It's just there's just not. These are, you know, I mean, the comparison is not there. So I want to play a game with Kevin Wheeler here. Are you ready?
I'm ready for a game.
All right. Cut payroll. What are your decisions? You have been tasked with cutting a chunk of payroll, TBD. The Cardinals are not yet certain what that is. Right. That's partially because in the weeks ahead, they have this negotiation going on. There is a really significant hearing in the middle of November. And again, I'll get all into this in another podcast. But what do you cut, Kevin? Right now, you have some push button things that you can do with the major league roster to cut salary. What decisions are you making? There are three options of note. There are veteran players with no trade clauses, but high salaries. What are you doing?
So, I mean, it's clear to me, the first easy step is I'm not bringing back the older free guys that are going into free agency. I'm not bringing back Lance Lynn. I'm not bringing back Kyle Gibson. And I'm not bringing back, you know, you spent $5 million on Keenan Middleton. You're not bringing him back. He was hurt and didn't do anything for you.
That's $32 million off of next year.
And you're saving on Giovanni Gallegos, who's another $5.5 million, he's not a factor in this anymore.
I was just going off of commitments towards next year.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He had a club option for $6.5 million.
He was long gone, though. He was already off waivers.
Sure, but if I'm adding up where you were for the regular season.
What are you doing now? What are you cutting now?
That's what I'm saying. So assuming all of that, because I'm not bringing any of those guys back.
Okay, so 12. So let's just, I'm going to recap for listeners along the way. So not taking the $12 million option on Lance Lynn, paying the $1 million buyout. So an $11 million gain.
Yep.
Not taking the $12 million option on Kyle Gibson, paying the $1 million buyout. Correct. So an $11 million gain.
Right.
Not taking the option on Keenan Middleton, which I think has a lesser buyout. I believe it's $8 million is his option.
His option, but I think you're right. The buyout.
It's a smaller buyout. So six. Thank you for correcting me there. So $6 million on that. Are you negotiating that down because he's coming off of injury, or are you like sayonara?
Bye.
Okay. All right.
Bye. Because I think so. That's my starting point.
Okay.
Right. So that starting point gets so me down quite a bit.
You've dropped $27 million
just in letting. Well, and then what are we?
$27 million. I'm counting like a Middleton buyout in there. So
yeah. Okay. But compared to 2024, I'm also not picking up Goldschmidt. So compared to
more than $50 million,
I'm already down $50 million from 2024.
Mm-hmm.
To start there, but then we got to factor in, you know, Sonny makes more, right? So it's not really going to be exactly
$20 million more,
right? 30. So it's gonna be more like 30-ish, based on what we just talked about.
Okay, what else are you doing?
So part of it depends on what I hear from the guys with the no trade clauses, right?
Okay, Kittredge is a free agent.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, probably gonna let him walk.
Well, the Cardinals are not; they're gonna let him walk. So
that's
Cardinals,
what I'm saying. I would too, not because of anything he did wrong, but because I should be, and this is part of what I'm talking about with the reset. Mm-hmm. I should be able to fill those roles from within the organization.
Okay. All
right. I should be able to find a reliever or two every year that can work in the middle and work their way up if they're good enough. I need to start finding Cade Smith. I need to start finding Tyler Holton. I need to start finding guys that I don't have to go spend $5 million, $6 million on, but I can make them better. I can make them good enough. And you've done some of that, right? I mean, that's Jojo Romero. You know, you didn't pay for him. You got him when he was a low paying guy and they weren't, you know, he was kind of a failed starter with Philly and they hadn't figured out how they wanted to use him. And he wasn't really fitting into their win now plans, but you got that with him. You did it with, Helsley. But I'd say using this model, I mean, I'm going to have to trade or at least seriously look at trading Helsley. Because you know he's going to get a big bump in arbitration. That's probably going to save me what? He was at 3.8 last year. What's he going to be at in the last year of ARB?
Eight.
Mm-hmm. So, but I wouldn't just dump it. That's not the point. My philosophy here is not going to be simply how much cash can I get rid of. It's where can I get rid of cash and get the best return? So, for example, if Nolan Arenado was okay with being traded, right? He says, you can move me, but here are the four teams. Well, if those four teams aren't going to give me anything, then I'm not just dumping the salary.
Okay.
I need to get something for it. So I think guys like, Sonny Gray would be tremendously valuable on the trade market.
Yeah.
You're talking about a good veteran starter right now for a contender and only a 2-year commitment. Heck yeah, man.
With a chance for three.
But, you know, by then he's 38. You may not want it. But the point is, if you need a starting pitcher and you're a top end, the quality of return would be good there because that would take one of those teams out of the free agent market where they might not have to commit $200 million to Corbin Burns.
Mm-hmm.
And they could get a they're not exactly the same. Burns is better. But you get what I'm saying. You get a close enough replica for a lot less commitment. Mm-hmm. I think Wilson Contreras would have tremendous value on his current contract.
He definitely would.
Yes. Three more years. He's under $20 million a year, and he's a legitimate middle of the order guy who can catch.
Yeah.
And I've been telling people this too. Like I'm a lifelong Tigers fan. He's the perfect fit for Detroit. They'll take on 3 years at $18 million a year. They'll plug him into the cleanup spot. He'll catch twice a week, DH, and maybe play some first base, but get to 150 games played instead of 120 games played as a full-time catcher. And you could get 30, 35 home runs out of that guy in that scenario.
Yeah.
Because of that, I think he has tremendous value. How many right-handed bats in free agency are going to be at that cost that are as good as he is?
And can
get behind the plate.
Right. No, he's very appealing. I mean, there's an argument to be had that he's the most appealing.
I would agree. He and Gray, but the problem with all of them, right? I mean, does he have a no trade as well? Am I remembering that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the problem with all of those scenarios is it comes down to where are they willing to go? And it's kind of like the Arenado thing with the Rockies. The Rockies were stuck with a deal that really wasn't very good. It was a terrible deal for them.
Yeah.
But they had no choice because he could say, nope, not going to New York. Nope, not going to Cleveland. Nope, not going to Detroit or whatever. He had that power. So you were limited to the number of teams that he would approve a deal to. So that's part of where, like, I don't want to look at those guys and say, that's my core plan because I can't control it until I know, right? If Sonny Gray comes to me and says, hey, any contender I'll consider, you go ahead and make the best deal. Okay, now I have a lot more leeway. Now I have a lot more room to negotiate with other teams and get the best deal. So the hard part for me now is not knowing
he's not going to say
they're into, right?
Yeah,
not knowing whether they want to go, not knowing whether they want to stay. But the other part of it to me would be I would move on from Mats, Michaelis, and save as much money as I could if I can. If nobody's willing to take any money, I probably don't just send them packing because if I'm going to pay you, I'm at least going to have the option of needing you at some point to start, right? To start, not necessarily for the full year.
Yeah.
I think you look at trading Eric Fetty too.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're right.
I mean, he's only $7.5 million for 1 year, but he's good age, good pitcher. He's not going to get you a mega return, but he probably gets you a nice player.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he gets you a top 100 prospect type guy, but, maybe he gets you two guys that are just below that. And, the problem here is you're trading a full year instead of half a year. But you look at the trade that Detroit made with Jack Flaherty, sending him to the Dodgers. There was no top 100 prospect in there, but there was a guy, who's a catcher first baseman, Tyrone Lorenzo, who's actually maybe tracking towards becoming a top 100 prospect in the next year or so. So, you know, it's kind of that guy that you could probably expect for 1 year of Fetty. It's not going to be, here's your three guys. But in any deal, it's going to be about saving money. If it's Michaelis, if it's Matt, if it's those guys, it's entirely about how much money can I save. If it's the other guys, then it's got to be the combination of the money saved and the return being right.
So in Wheeler's roster, you have, and I tried to keep up. I really did.
I went fast.
You've cut about $70 million plus from this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like you said, there are raises in there, but you know, you've almost cut exactly what they're expecting for a rights fee. Let's just put it in those terms.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've almost cut for a reason. Like, yeah.
Direct dollar for dollar.
Right.
Leaving the team at 67% of what its spending was this past year.
To start with, yeah.
Effectively. Oh, to start with, so now you're going to do stuff?
Well, no, I mean, then what I'm looking to do is what some other teams have done very effectively, which is find guys that are essentially tweeners, right? Look at what Kansas City did or what Boston did initially with Michael Wacha. Mm-hmm. You find a guy that's kind of not at their peak. Look at what Detroit did with Michael Lorenzen and Jack Flaherty. You know, there are teams doing that where you're getting a guy who's not in super high demand and you're getting him on a 1 year deal and then you fix him. Well, the problem is, do you have the people that can fix him?
Right. So like Steven Matz.
A guy like that.
Or Eric Fetty.
Yes. Yes. A guy like that, except with Matz, you had to commit 4 years and $44 million.
That's over. That's over. Right. Now he's a 1 year guy.
Right. And he is 1 year at $12.5 million. So, again, that's my point. I'm not just sending him away. I'm only sending him away if I'm getting salary relief. Otherwise, he's that guy that I'm talking about.
Right. That's what I'm saying, is he's already that guy. So here's my thinking. All right. And you didn't ask, but here's my thinking is something that Mozeliak said at the press conference really stuck in my ear as somewhat of a direction to watch. Like it's not their magnetic north, but it might be part of that. Right. That might be close to the magnetic north. He said they're not going to sign guys this winter to cost draft picks.
Right. Right.
They want to accumulate. So,
yes.
Right. So QO's out. And I'm like, well, if that's the notion of like not wanting to lose something, then it's not very far for them to go, we want to gain these things.
Right. Right.
So how do you gain those things? What moves could they make that would gain those things?
Let's go.
All right. No, hold that thought. Hold that thought, because we're going to make people wait for part two of this podcast. You good with that, Kevin?
I'm good. Let's go.
That, of course, is Kevin Wheeler, 1120 AM, does a whole bunch of stuff there for KMOX, including appearing on the Dave Glover Show, DGS, not DGS Show. You can also find him, all over. Man, you're doing roundtables, you're doing everything.
Yeah, we're busy.
And also a recurring guest here on the Best Podcast in Baseball. The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. You can find the Best Podcast in Baseball wherever you get your podcasts. You can rate and review it. Please subscribe to it. Subscriptions make sponsorships possible. Sponsorships make this podcast possible and make it possible to bring on high-dollar free agents like Kevin. Well, not free agents. High-dollar talents
like Kevin. I'm a labor claim, dude. You know it.
Yeah, high-dollar talents, five-tool players like Kevin Wheeler. You can also find the Best Podcast in Baseball with all the constant Cardinals coverage at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. Kevin, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You're the man.
We have so much more to get to, so we'll just have to do this again.
Let's do it again, yeah. Yeah.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.